Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. As the Catholic Church, like other churches, responds to the Royal Commission and looks to changing practices in the future, one of those setting the agenda will be Reverend Timothy Harris. He's just been installed as the Bishop of Townsville. It was the first episcopal ordination in Townsville in nearly 50 years. Around 2,000 people attended the Mass, which was held at the Ryan Catholic College and live-streamed on YouTube. Two people proudly watching that YouTube feed were Bishop Harris's elderly parents, Shirley and Jim. They watched from their nursing home in Brisbane as their son took the mitre. In his first official address, an emotional Bishop Harris held back tears as he honoured his parents, who have early signs of dementia. He said, "Mum and Dad, it was your lived faith that you passed on and modelled for me that has made all this possible. Without you and your daily witness, I would be nothing." The challenges facing this new Bishop of Townsville are very much like the challenges facing the Catholic Church in the nation as a whole. A shortage of priests, issues about women's ordination, the whole question of celibacy, and of course, those responses to the Royal Commission. We covered all of those subjects and more when I spoke with Bishop Harris, one of the first of the new breed of bishops to be appointed after the Royal Commission. You've chosen grace and mercy.
That is correct.
As your, you wouldn't call it a slogan, would you? You'd call it a...
No, well, it's a coat of arms. So, yeah. Like, every bishop has to choose a kind of, not a theme for his leadership, but that's what it's like.
So why did you choose grace and mercy?
Well, when the nuncio, which is the Pope's representative, asked me to, or told me that the Pope had appointed me Bishop of Townsville, and which was a huge shock, I have to say. When I said yes after I was phoned, I said I accept with the grace of God, and I took a deep breath and said those words, and I have remembered those words ever since. So grace had to form part of my motto or my coat of arms, and the other one was mercy, because I felt that God, I suppose, through the Church is. Through the Pope has asked me to become a bishop, so he's been merciful, like, because I'm a sinner. This is what I was thinking, you know. Yeah. He's chosen someone who's less than perfect, a sinner like everybody else, and I suppose he's chosen me as a sinner. But because of that, I've now got to be that person of grace and mercy to others. I've chosen that because it's going to model my leadership, hopefully, in the next however long I'm Bishop of Townsville.
Indeed, you said during your address,
yes,
that you won't abandon people who come to the church with the same attitude. That is, I'm a sinner, I need mercy and forgiveness.
Well, and that's exactly, that's a wonderful illustration of what I've just said.
Yes.
And that is true. And I wanted everyone to know that... you know, Jesus taught, when I said this too, and it's making the same point, Jesus talked in parables all the time. And people didn't fully understand when they first heard it. But there's that sense that the truth will set you free. You may not recognize the truth first up. It may take you a couple of years. It may take you a lifetime. But all of that time, I believe God in Jesus Christ is merciful to us. It's the model I believe Pope Francis wants us to adopt as well.
Hmm.
I don't want some kind of predetermined sanction for people that I serve. I mean, you know, the Church just can't be seen as that body that has a sanction in the cupboard or a penalty in the cupboard that it whips out when you actually don't achieve what we hope you would achieve.
So, now, Bishop Tim, you've also been very realistic about the task facing the Church itself, and here it
true,
is.
True.
You say, I know our Catholic Church is itself undergoing a cleansing.
It is.
And as that cleansing is taking place, we must allow the grace of the Holy Spirit to empower us for service, and so you go on.
Mm.
It's true, though, isn't it, that the standing of the Church is now not what it was, and in some respects, you'd have to say, for good reason.
Oh, and rightly so. I mean, we have to clean up our own backyard, well and truly, and it's no good denying it. Perhaps for too long we've done that. We did deny, didn't we, when something happened in that regard. What did the church do? It moved the offender to another parish. And what happened there? The same person did the same thing. So we were in denial in a very big way, and I'm talking about the child sexual abuse issue.
Yes.
Those days of denial are gone, and I think also the fact that I think the church is very well aware that it's got to be more attentive to those people we accept for ordained ministry. You know, did we get it wrong in the past? Were we too eager to accept anybody who presented themselves, who told us they had a vocation? Well, perhaps. Well, today, I think in this time of cleansing, we have got to be very attentive to all of that. And I think the challenge is for us, you know, we are desperate for priests at the moment, but because of what's happened with the Royal Commission and the issue of child sexual abuse, and we've got quite a number of Catholic priests and others who have offended, it doesn't mean that we just accept anybody. In fact, I think we need to double our efforts to screen people. So if it actually means slowing down the process of recruitment, then so be it, to ensure that we have the best possible people available for leadership in the church.
Can you see the nature of the church changing in the next 10 years as you continue to respond to that?
I think it's changing already. Hmm. The trouble is, you see, or the challenge is, we are a universal church, so culturally we're different. Like, we're different to those in the church in Nigeria. We're a Roman Catholic church all around the world, but quite obviously each culture is different. So, you know, in terms of changing the culture, I think the West certainly is having to change its culture, and I do think countries like some of the African nations and other parts of the world, they're going to have to probably eventually, some have said that they will be facing perhaps some of the same issues that we've been facing here in the West. So, the different parts of the world, different churches in the world are probably going to be as challenged as we are. You see, our attitude to women here in the West, we're certainly in the church, is changing. We can't ordain women in our church, but we can certainly provide opportunities for them where they can show their leadership. In fact, a Catholic church without women in leadership, I'm not talking about ordained leadership, because that's not what we allow at the moment, but we certainly would be encouraging women at many levels to have an involvement that they haven't had before. And if they can advise the bishop more and more, and they offer a different voice to the male voice, they offer a voice at times that they say things that men don't even think about. So I think we've got to be able to encourage women in leadership roles, not the ordained ministry, because that's not our discipline, but certainly in every other kind of leadership, I think. And the Pope is saying the stuff.
Yes.
You know?
Well, you've tackled one of the two big issues. The other big issue then is celibacy. Can you see that coming under pressure for change?
Well, we've already got within the Catholic Church many examples of priests or ministers from other churches coming across to us and bringing their wives with them, and we've accepted that. So there's already a number of
softening
priests who are married.
That, yes.
That's true, but for most of us, like myself, celibacy is still the norm. There's a great witness in celibacy. It would be wrong of us to immediately blame celibacy, for example, for child sexual abuse. I think some would like to draw that conclusion, but I think if you look carefully at that, that is not a cause at all. The issue of child sexual abuse, how that affects people, and why people succumb to that is beyond me. But in terms of celibacy, I think most of us, by far most of us, 93%, because we found out 7% of Catholic priests have been involved in some kind of pedophilia. Those statistics are there. But 93% of us, I believe, are living a good and wholesome life as celibate priests. Yes. So I don't think we can ditch that, because celibacy is a gift. It's a gift. And in fact, I think any priest that would find celibacy easy, on the other hand, there's something wrong, in that sense that we're all alive and we've been given the gift of our sexuality. It's a question of living celibacy within the context of our sexuality, not so much controlling it, but living that particular life. And I think that's a challenge for all of us who live the celibate life. But it means that we're alive. The last thing we want is someone who is sort of, you know, a neuter, who doesn't have any kind of feeling, if you know what I'm getting at.
Yes, I do, emotionally. Yes,
absolutely. Exactly. We need someone who's alive, fully alive, and who was balanced in the way they lived their life. So, you know, these are huge issues for our church.
Yes, they are.
At 54, being made a bishop, I have no doubt that I'm going to have to face a whole lot of other issues as we move into the future. In Townsville, where I'm being made bishop, for example, we've got this huge diocese, and we've got the big challenge of trying to find priests to staff it. So how do I keep the Diocese of Townsville Eucharistic in that sense? Where do I get the priest to staff it? Do I keep bringing them from overseas, or do we look at some other model where we can provide Eucharist for people? But these are huge questions for us.
Well, I know that God will be with you as you seek to answer those questions, and I pray that he blesses you in service.
Yeah, look, thank you, and it's been wonderful talking to you.